This week on Multiverse News, Deadpool reshoots, Peacemaker's DCU canon status gets complicated, plus another strike may be imminent. All of that and more coming up after this.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Multiverse News, your one-stop shop for info about all your favorite fandoms. My name's Jay Scotty St. Clair, standing in for Matthew Carroll, and I am joined by a stellar cast here. I've got my stalwart multiverse contributor with me, Jay Sisson here. What's happening, Jay?
Oh, not too much. Just happy to be here, as always. Fixture of Tuesday night.
Indeed, indeed. And we don't have Haley with us this week, but we do have the other half of the Source Pages podcast, Brian V. Klein. Welcome back to Multiverse News, Brian.
Well, thank you for having me back. I guess I passed the audition.
Indeed you did. Indeed you did. All right. And that's not the only guest that we have. We also have returning guest Sarah Day McDougall from the Peeves Gab Fest podcast, as well as the Fantasy Heroes Draft associated with the MCU podcast. Welcome back, Sarah Day.
Thank you for having me back. I'll try to follow the rules this time. And also excited to finish my kind of infinity gauntlet of hosts because, Jay, you were the last one for me yet to have recorded with. So excited to complete the set.
Nice.
Wait, I got to interject. What rules are there? You said you're going to follow the rules. I wasn't aware of any rules on this thing.
Well, there
are no rules. The lightning round rules.
Oh, okay.
It was a little chaotic last time.
The only ones who really enforce them are Matt sometimes and Haley most of the time. And I don't see either of them here. So, okay. You know, that's a.
So it's going to be chaos.
It's time to party.
It's like the Wild West in here now. Nice.
The rules are getting the points treatment from whose line is it anyway? They don't matter.
There you go.
All right, so we're going to kick things off the way we have been the last few weeks with a new 5-star Apple Podcast review, and this one comes from C Man. I'm going to make sure to separate those pretty well there. 81412, who says this show is so good. So short and sweet. We appreciate it.
It took just like about 10 seconds for that to land, but once I got it.
Same.
As soon as I saw that username, I was like, I don't know if this is intentional, but I'm going to make sure I avoid that pitfall.
Good choice.
Anyway, thank you. So let's get started with the news. We don't have, you know, as much news as we've had some weeks, but we still have some pretty potent news here. Jay, do you mind kicking things off so I can respond to this story?
Yeah. All right, so we're going to start with a rumor associated with the MCU. Vetted Scooper with an accuracy rating of nearly 80%, Daniel RPK, has supplied us with another MCU rumor this week, claiming that Deadpool and Wolverine will undergo reshoots in May ahead of its July release. Reshoots are a normal part of any production, but with Deadpool being Marvel Studios' sole feature film of 2024, and these taking place so close to the film's release, do they give us cause for concern or excitement?
A little bit of concern, but the excitement definitely overwhelms the concern, because as we stated here, you know, reshoots are a normal part of any production, especially a production of this scale. But the fact that these reshoots are happening in such close proximity to the release, it does give me a little bit of, you know, pause for concern, because I don't want to see this thing get delayed. It is, you know, the only movie that we're getting this year. But if it gets delayed to, you know, maybe like November, I'd be okay with that. But if it gets pushed to the next year, it's going to be a tough pill for me to swallow. But I have to imagine that these reshoots are in response to the trailer that we just got with the Super Bowl. You know, the speculation and the rumors have gone kind of rampant with like people expecting certain cameos. But for my purposes, I really think it's the involvement of the TVA. I have to imagine, you know, the people behind the scenes have seen the response to the inclusion of the TVA in this film. And I think they're probably going to have to go back and do some pickups just to increase the continuity with Loki, because we know that this film was in active production well before the rest of us got to see how Loki concluded. And given the incredibly positive reception to that series, yeah, I have to imagine like they want to make sure they do the TVA right and tie this thing in the right way. That's my take anyway.
Well, I gotta say, I think with them announcing now that they're not doing them right away, they're usually, because I'm from dealing with a lot of the stuff with like Star Wars, a lot of the pickups that go closer are almost more like technical things, like they didn't get this quite right, and so they have to take another shot, because I don't think that's going to be anything that's going to be majorly important or technically hard to put back into the film, because by that time you're getting, you know, weeks away from like release. That, right. I mean, I know nowadays you could do a reshoot up to like a week beforehand, because it's just, you know, cut and paste, put it in there, and then they just send this stuff out digitally anyway. But I'm thinking right. that it might be more like, oh, this didn't look quite the way we wanted. It's there, but it's just like, let's get a couple more angles to see if we can get the way we want to look. Because if they're doing a lot more stuff practically than as like the special effects stuff, then, you know, I don't think, I mean, it could be the what you said about the TVA, but I'd say I'm like the same thing, like 80-20. I think it's more like there's technical issues with stuff more than like, oh my God, because they didn't really give us much anything in the trailer except for the TVA and like that Secret Wars comic. That was about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention too that in this report they did mention that the studio is very impressed with this movie. At least like that's the rumbling, that they really are kind of blown away and that they do want Sean Levy to come back and direct more films for Marvel Studios in the future. Like it's that sort of level of walking away being like, man, this guy can sort of carry us in a way with some other franchises or some other ideas in the future. So I think that type of thing is a good sign. You know, you get concerned when you hear about reshoots and they last for a long time, kind of like what we're hearing with Captain America. Like that's the danger zone, right? Like Captain America right. 4, all we hear about it is, okay, it's a mess. Like, they did test screenings. Everybody hated it. And then we're going to do, like, 5 weeks of reshoots. That's where you get worried. So I think at this moment, I think it's sort of wait and see. We're hearing they're impressed with it. We're hearing everybody on board's happy with it. And then we're hearing they're doing some reshoots. So to me, that sort of falls into the, like, let's not panic or worry about that category. Captain America, you know, I'm a little worried about, I guess. But on the other sure. hand, I think Deadpool's kind of the other side of the coin there.
I'm sort of in the same boat as you, Jay. I don't think Ryan Reynolds would kind of do us dirty like that and have it delayed that much longer. You know, it's his passion project too. And so knowing that they're feeling good about this movie, I think the reshoots are just, like you said, little technical things. I really hope for fantasy's sake that this movie isn't pushed till next year, because it's already slim pickings for points. So yeah. We need all these cameos.
It's already got broad shoulders. It's got to carry a lot.
It's carrying a lot.
Yeah, to all your point, I do agree. I have to imagine that these reshoots are going to be pretty minor things. They can't afford to do anything super extensive. So when I talk about, you know, adding little things to make the continuity with the TVA, I don't think it'll be anything super, super extensive. And if it is, that is when we will get that, you know, unfortunate delay, which I'm hoping against. But Jay, you mentioned Sean Levy, and it is really encouraging to hear how much confidence they have in him, because I actually went back and rewatched Free Guy for the first time since I saw it when it came out. And I wasn't super high on the Adam Project, but Free Guy is super solid. Like, he really knows how to, you know, balance that tone, like have some heartfelt and emotional beats, but also have some pretty great action and also kind of do that balls to the wall thing I'm always asking for.
I agree with that. Adam, I love Free Guy, and I think Adam Project took me about five times. I kept falling asleep during that movie. I liked it,
I really liked that movie.
No, I ended up at the end, but it was just sort of one of those ones when it was done, I was like, okay, that was good. And yeah. Free Guy, I think I've seen that probably like five or six times, because it is so just, there's so much to love about it. And it's, you know, Ryan Reynolds, I know he gets pigeonholed sometimes, basically like after Deadpool, he basically plays the same character in different variations since then.
I think it was the Adam Project that became apparent to me. I think that's why it never sat well to me. I was like, okay, it's just sarcasm. That's how you respond to anybody in your Ryan Reynolds. Yeah. It's just sarcasm.
Even then, what was that movie that came out last year with him and Will Ferrell, the Christmas movie, where it was
the
like
Christmas.
The
Christmas. Oh, that was, yeah. The Christmas, I couldn't
yeah,
think
he
that
basically
one.
Played Spirited. Spirited, yeah. He played a little bit, yeah. But it was like, that's every time there's sarcasm, it's like, I love the guy, but it's sort of like you're becoming like Adam Sandler, where sure. It's like every he plays Adam Sandler in a lot of movies. Or Jack Black nowadays. Indeed. It's like, I was going to see Dune 2 again, and I heard just the Kung Fu Panda 4 playing in another theater. I'm like, oh, that's definitely Jack Black, whatever. Oh, Kung Fu Panda. Oh, that's right.
Skadoosh. All righty. Let's move on. All right. Over in the DC side of things, James Gunn's recent social media comments attempting to clarify Peacemaker's status in the DCU canon may have had the opposite effect. While addressing fan questions on Threads, the filmmaker stated that the first season of the John Cena-led Max series is not canon and that the second season would take place after the events of Superman, going as far to confirm that that movie's events would have an impact on the show. Are we able to make peace with these somewhat contradictory revelations?
At this point, I think it's James Gunn being James Gunn. He is, he knows how to push the fanboys' buttons. And with him, he might say something later where it's like, well, you know, it's like he did with the whole Blue Beetle thing. It's the first DCU character, but it's not the first DCU movie. So is this canon? Is it? I mean, Peacemaker is his own thing. So it's sort of like if it is, it's not one of those things that's that detrimental. I mean, what really happened in Peace. And I guess it's also, too, because the involvement in the Justice League and Peacemaker 1, if there's not the same Justice League in the new canon going forward. Then, because you know, like that last scene where you see Aquaman and Flash, and you know, he calls Aquaman a fish. You know what?
Whatever. Right.
So I can see him where that's one of the things he's going with. But other than that, it's I think him being in charge now and him basically streamlining things across the board can only be once all this dust settles and it starts going. You'll see it's a good thing because this way you don't have to go like, what are we watching here? Like with the movies, I think, you know, I finally got to watch Aquaman the other day and it was a decent movie. If it's not canon, yeah. I don't care because it's right. Sort of like that whole thing was a mess to begin with because you had the Zack Snyder verse and then you have so many different things going on with DC. I think now when you got the gun and you've got the Batman universe and then, well, the Joker universe too. So it's sort of like at least it's, the line is clearly stated what it is. So if it isn't, I mean, it's James Gunn. I have still about 95% of the faith I had in him when they announced him as the head honcho going forward. So
sure.
We'll see.
Do you think that season 2 will still have continuity to season 1, or is it going to kind of separate itself so that it can be canon with the new verse?
Well,
That's the question.
That's the question.
Yeah. It's like, how exactly are we going to get to that point where season 1 is no longer considered canon and we do have season 2 taking into account what happens in, you know, his first film in the DCU. So for my purposes, I think Peacemaker kind of exists in this unique space where he can kind of just do his own thing. He can almost kind of like become the Deadpool of the DC universe. Like, I don't need him breaking the fourth wall, but if he can kind of like just drop in, because you know he did appear in James Gunn's The Suicide Squad and then he had his own series and now he is going to be connected to the DCU in some fashion, where Blue Beetle, you know, his film was not connected to anything else, and I can kind of see that working a lot more easily. But my brain's going to get broken if I try to, you know, figure out how exactly we're going to keep the continuity going here. So I think that's the way to go with it. Like, Peacemaker is such a zany and out there character, and I love that intro so much. It's one of the few intros that I never skip. So,
oh yeah, you don't skip that.
And they,
yeah, as long
they just
as
announced that they've refilmed that too. So I wonder how much this is impacting the new intro.
Okay, if there's a new intro that pays homage to that old intro, like, I'm on board. As long as it just has that same level of energy and zaniness, I'll be a happy watcher of Peacemaker.
Now, even in, I just thought of it, his character in The Suicide Squad and his character in The Peacemaker show weren't really, like, it didn't feel like the same, because in Suicide Squad, he was a lot more serious and a lot less, like, kind of a goofball as he is in his show. So I could even see them separating those in a bit, but I mean, obviously they're not, but it's still just like, that character is well up in the air where they're going with it anyway, so.
Yeah, and James Gunn is notorious. I mean, he keeps his people. Like, when he casts a person, that's why you see the same people, like Nathan Fillion, for example, like popping up in all of his movies. Like, so I totally expect that a lot of the people who were involved with this first season will be in this second season. I can't say if they'll carry over all of their qualities from season one or all their storylines, but I do expect that we'll see a lot of past John Cena. We'll see a lot of the same people appearing in this, because that's just kind of how he runs things. But I mean, I'll say to this the same thing that I've said in the past, especially when we've talked about Daredevil, which kind of like gets people mad at me. But that is that you just should not take canon too seriously, because when you take it too seriously and you really start to parse it out and it's like, this building doesn't match this and this guy doesn't match this, it's just like you're doing what the studio is not. Okay, like they're like, you know what I mean? Like they're, I promise you that James Gunn is looking at season two as a fresh thing, and he's not thinking about, he's not like hurting his own brain trying to think about like, how do we connect this to season one? He's just going in and saying, it's time to freshen it up. We want to connect it to the DCU. We want it to keep going. We love the character. We love the guy playing the character. So we'll just retool it a little bit and we'll just pop it in. And that's it. Like, that's the full extent of the conversation. So you really kind of have to, like, don't do what the creatives are not doing, right? Which is like really burying into the canon. And I think, like, as we see, I mean, because on the Marvel side, like I mentioned Daredevil, you got to think, like, you know, John Bernthal as the Punisher, like things like that. They're going to bring these things in, and I don't know if they're going to fully commit to that old canon, but they're going to commit to enough of it. So I think you just got to trust that and then just kind of just throw your hands up and just be like, bring me a good show, you know, and just don't take it too seriously.
Well, I think both of the universes have a thing going for them right now, with the MCU having the multiverse and the DC universe having the whole Flashpoint thing, where it's sort of just like, everything's canon and everything's not canon. If you don't want, they're going to pick and choose what they want. And at the end, when they finally do close the portals, I guess, that's what you're going to have going forward. So figure it out and then just move on.
I can't help but be reminded of the Syndrome quote from The Incredibles. So when you say everything's canon, it's like, when everyone's canon, no one is.
Yeah. Trust me, I know the pitfalls of canonicity back in the days with the old EU and the Clone Wars killed off character. And they're like, oh my God, Evan Peele was already in, he killed off in this book. It's like, oh my God, it's like a fourth rate Jedi master who's just coming in here now. And you're worried about a book that like not many people read, but enough people did. It's that vocal minority. And that's what happens with any fandom that has that canon. Little things like that, all you got to have is a handful of people that just keep blowing the trumpet, and it's going to make it seem like it's a lot bigger than it is. No, I'm just saying is that the vocal minority for a lot of ways can just be like toxic. And yeah, you know, for the most part, people that go see, I've had people be like, well, I love these MCU movies. How can we never see Batman in them? Most people don't know stuff like that.
This is different, but it kind of reminds me of whenever Sam Raimi was talking about shooting Multiverse of Madness, and the big criticism from some people was that, hey, the character of Wanda doesn't really connect to what happened in WandaVision. Like, it was left in this way, and then it kind of changed. It shifted a little bit. She got evil all of a sudden or whatever. And Sam Raimi responded to them by being like, I never saw WandaVision. And that just, like, people's brains splattered against their windows. Like, their heads exploded. Like, they were like, you never saw it? Like, and it's like, they're not thinking about it in that way. Like, he's thinking about making the story he wants to make, right? And they'll make the story they want to make. And I think James Gunn made both of these things. He made season one and he's going to make season two. But also too, like he mentioned in response, another fan asked him about directing it at the same time as Superman, and he was like, yeah, they're both shooting in July. I'm not directing all these episodes. Like, I wrote most of them, and I'm going to direct like one or two, but like a lot of people, I'm bringing in other people to direct it.
Yeah, I think he only directed maybe the first one, two episodes, and then the finale of season one. So, yeah, I mean, that stands to reason. And just kind of talking about how it is like the focal minority that's going to outcry about canon, I think that makes a lot of sense just thinking about John Cena. And he's like, he's a guy that brings an audience with him, and people are going to check out a new John Cena show or a continuing John Cena show, independent of all the other things that the DC universe is doing. So a guy like James Gunn and the, you know, everybody behind the show, they're going to keep that in mind and make this thing, you know, appeal to a mass audience.
I think after this Academy Awards, more people may want to see more of John Cena anyway. So
I think I've we'll seen enough of him.
I don't know if you can see much more, but it's just like, wow, that, I was gonna say, that took some balls, but I mean, it's John Cena. You can pull it
not
off.
Not that you would know.
No.
All righty. Our next story comes from Netflix. Netflix has renewed the live-action adaptation series of Avatar: The Last Airbender for 2 more seasons, with the series set to end at the conclusion of season 3. While we have 2 Avatar aficionados on the panel, we figured we'd open up the floor to discuss the series, its source material, and future. Who's saying yip, yip?
Yip, yip.
Yeah, yeah.
I really enjoyed the live action, and I thought I can see some of the criticisms. Yes, the writing was not as great as some other Netflix shows, but I think the actors can really do a lot in the next 2 seasons. I hope that the writers kind of hear what the fan base has been saying. Because I think the actors can really do a good job with some good writing. And so I'm excited to see where that can go. And then kind of taking the heart out of the show was another criticism. Again, I'm thinking seasons 2 and 3 can fix that issue. I can see that. That wasn't a huge issue for me with the live action. It is a much older telling of the story for an older audience. And I think that they did a good job telling that story for an older audience. And I think, you know, taking a cartoon and making it live action, you're going to lose a lot of that goofiness. And so I didn't have a problem with that, because a lot of the heart from the animation comes from being a cartoon and having that goofiness. So I think overall it was a really great adaptation. I really enjoyed watching it. I was really pumped to see season 2 and 3 get renewed. And I'm really excited to see what they do with it. On the flip side, my husband did have different views on it. He, you know, he was introduced to anime through Avatar. Not that Avatar is an anime, but it's the similar style and similar storytelling, and that's how he got into it. So Avatar is really dear to his heart, and he did not appreciate the live action as much as I did, but he is willing to give season 2 and 3 another chance. He will watch it, he said, but he's definitely in that fan base that had a little bit more of an issue with the live action.
Gotcha.
The only issue I had so far, like I said, I haven't seen all of it yet, and some of it is obvious, is that they need to put the hair and makeup, their budget higher, because some of those wigs and beards and they're not very good. They're not like Benedict Cumberbatch level bad, but like Uncle Iroh's beard and hair is so like, oh my God, you could tell that it's not. But other than that,
Benedict Cumberbatch in No Way Home, right? Cause he's great otherwise.
Oh yeah. I mean, just like the hair though. I've had Netflix is sort of like that jilted lover, because they've had I was so hyped up for Cowboy Bebop live action, and the live action was not very good. When you try to do everything beat for beat of the anime, it didn't work. On the other hand, One Piece was incredible. They took the heart of that. They took the joy and the humor of that. With this, what I've seen so far is that I knew that they said they were going to cut out a lot of the side stories in the live action and focus on the point of the first season, which is the waterbending. What Sarah Day was saying too is in the future seasons that the source material gets a lot more adult anyway and serious. So it's not going to be as, you know, goofy as it could have been in season 1. So I think that's going to give the actors a lot more, the lot better chance to throw out their acting chops, as long as the writing is good there. So, but yeah, so far I've been happy. I've only seen 3 of the 8 because I'm watching it with my wife and it's just time consuming and other things pop up. We start watching something and we fall asleep 10 minutes into watching things. So, but I have got them to see, you know, although that one episode when they're in Omashu and he's, I thought he was going to say my cabbages and he doesn't. I'm like, oh, they're going to do this. And then by the end of the episode, he says it. It's like, that's the, it's the one thing he wanted to see. I mean, at least for me, I knew they weren't going to make that big of the fan base that bad if you're going to tease it and then not do it. So, I mean, if you watch the animated show, you know that's like one of the most underrated, beloved characters out of the Cabbage Man.
The Cabbage Merchant, right. Yeah.
But according to that, though, and I know that you've responded when I posted the link that Daniel Day Kim, that SOB, when he did the Zoom call with everyone else, I thought he's like, I can't at this time announce a season two. And I thought Gordon Cormier, who plays Aang, he looks like he's just about to like start bawling and crying. And he's like,
all of that looked so crushed. Yeah. And I wanted to cry. And I knew there was a season two and three already. And I'm like, oh man, their faces.
But he didn't, he didn't play it off for that long. It was about 30 seconds of him explaining it. And all of them are just like, well, we got two and three. And then it was like, like, okay, cool. I mean, we knew that they were going to just make this announcement of we're not renewing it, especially because of how well it's been actually the critical, the fan, the viewership has been of the, like, what they expected or more. So they can't complain. Although Netflix, you never know. Sometimes with them, it's like, okay, well, it didn't do as quite as good as we thought. So, and it cost this much. Let's just cancel it.
I do hope that they film season two and three back to back. They don't need to release them back to back, but I do hope they film it because it's already going to be Aang and everybody is like 2 or 3 years older than they were when they filmed the first season. But I don't care. I'm excited.
If they wait too long, it's sort of like with the whole thing with like One Piece where they've already announced so many seasons. I'm like, by the time they get caught up, I mean, these guys are going to be in their 50s. You can't play. I mean, because as far as the show goes, they're 1,000 episodes in and it's only been like 4 years on the show. So
I think they'll absolutely shoot them back to back. I mean, just because what you mentioned, like the age, that's happening fast. You know, I mean, you can see it even in the Zoom call. Like, we got to get it going with the talent here. But what is undeniable about this is it has generated a ton of impressions. The streaming numbers are putting it at the top of the Nielsen charts already. But even people, like, it's like the saying, like no bad press or. Gosh, what am I trying to say? Bad press. No bad press is good.
No bad press. No press is bad press.
There we go. No press. No, yeah. And yeah, because even people hating on it were hashtagging like Avatar, hashtag Avatar The Last Airbender, and then they're hating on it, but that still generates impressions. So like if you go to like TikTok and Twitter and all this, you're talking like millions of impressions for this franchise. And so it has generated a ton of social media conversations and that has driven a lot of people to it. And so I think like when Netflix comes out immediately, they did the same thing with One Piece. When they come out immediately, like while season one has just been released and they say, we're doing this again, like, you know, they're walking away super satisfied with their streaming numbers. I mean, they renewed One Piece within like 3 days after they got it. And same thing with this. I mean, so it's they're happy with it, and so to jump on and be like, let's fully commit to season two and three, that tells me they have to be shooting them back to back, otherwise they would just commit to season two. So let's just get it out of the way, let's do the whole thing, and we'll push it out over the next few years.
And the fact that they're doing it in like the same way that the animated show was, is that two and three, they told the whole story, they're going to be able to tell the whole story. Good. Now you're not going to get people that could be like, well, I know some people didn't finish Cowboy Bebop because it was like, we know we're not going to get anything more from it. Then what's the point of being disappointed in case you enjoy it and be like, okay, there's nothing more. So,
very good. Let's now talk about some of the industry behind the scenes and happenings. Some not super exciting news, but it seems like another Hollywood strike may be just around the corner as the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, IATSE, and major Hollywood studios have begun negotiations for a new contract. Similar to last year's Writers Guild of America and SAG-AFTRA strikes, the primary focuses include wage increases, contract enforcement, quality of life aspects, and protections against emerging technologies, including AI. The current contract expires on July 31st, potentially leading to a strike if an agreement is not reached in the coming months. Are we clutching our pearls yet?
I am a little bit worried about this because we did mention this back whenever the Hollywood strikes were going on, the writers and actors strikes, the concurrent strikes that really brought Hollywood to a grinding halt last year. And we mentioned on this podcast, like, hey, you know, there's a lot of people who work on set who aren't actors and aren't writers, who design the sets, who do construction, who do all the electricity and lighting, like all that stuff. Those are all employees, and they are not getting paid right now, and they are not happy about it. And so they left these strikes. Those workers are working on projects. They're not salaried. They're getting paid on the job. They left those strikes very angry. And IATSE left it like not mincing words about how angry they were, that they felt like that they were not looked out for during this time, that they were kind of cut out while all the negotiations were going on and they were not provided for. So a lot of people lost a lot of money during that time. And so as you see these contract negotiations going on, your hope is that they'll sort of use the writers and the actors' agreements that were come to with the studios as sort of a guide to come up with guardrails for things like AI and things like pay and things like that, residuals, you know, all this type of stuff that really was squabbled over, that they can kind of use that to sort of guide these negotiations. But on the other hand, like, if these are negotiations that don't come to fruition, you will see Hollywood stop again. Right. I mean, it'll be that same level of what happened with the writers and the actors strike. And we've seen the delays that have occurred from that. We've seen multiple studios have to delay their projects by a year or more. And yeah, it's on the horizon. They're still months away. That's why I'm not like panicking about it yet. But it is something that you're going to have to watch if you're interested in content coming out when you think that it's going to come out.
I think they'll probably nail something down quick just because of the delays of everything from last year. And it is, you would have to think that there is a lot of people that are involved in that, but I got to think that the percentage of the, you know, the payroll that goes to stuff like that is a lot less than the actors and the talent and stuff. Not that they can't bank on, oh, well, these are guys that can be replaced. They're going to, you know, we'll just let them strike and then we'll replace them with someone else. Because you know that the other people are going to be, you know, the solidarity with the actors and the writers and stuff will be like, no, we're not going to put this out if these guys aren't here. But I think at the end of the day, it's not going to be the same level of money committed to the contracts for the actors as it is to this. So that I think they'll just, if it ends up being a production shutdown because of this, then it's got to be that these guys might be asking for way too much, or that the studios are like, not this again. But it's like, that's what unions are for. So, you know, pay them the right amount, that the money that's being made from it, and just get on with it, because they can't afford to have another shutdown that, you know, pushes everything around in the way they've had it now.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think I'm on a similar page as the two of you. I'm not in like full-on panic mode quite yet, but I am concerned, because especially on the TV side of things, like, I've really started to see the impact of, you know, last year's strikes. Like, the only like new show that's like premiered recently that's like doing something right now is Shogun, and that kind of feels like the exception. On the other side of things, like Bob's Burgers, I'm a big Bob's Burgers fan, and I'm used to them taking like a holiday and then even like a spring break. But this year, it's like, we already know that we're going to get fewer episodes, and they're really, really spacing those episodes out. So, you know, this doesn't just impact the film industry, this impacts TV as well. And that's how most people, you know, get their primary form of entertainment. So, I feel like I have to provide the caveat. Like, again, I do stand behind the workers, and laborers should definitely be compensated and get their due, because, you know, it's so often it's the little people that, you know, that others, you know, stand on their shoulders and they're touted as giants and what have you. So, I mean, we gotta make it right. We gotta compensate people fairly. Otherwise, what's the point of all this entertainment? And it's going to go away. So
I can tell you, there's only two network shows I still watch, which are Abbott Elementary and Ghost. And those just both had their season premieres, like in the last, like they're on both like episode 4, I think, of the season. So they both didn't come out until February or March. It's like, come on. You had to wait the whole spring, you know, the whole fall and winter. Like, I know that there was a strike, but now we don't get any new episodes of it. So
I think you guys really, really said it all. I'm in agreement with all of you. I just hope that if they do strike, that the networks will give them what they need.
Yeah, we can't do anything without those Best Boys and Key Grips. So
All right, now let's talk about what's happening over on our Patreon. Jay.
Yeah, so we do have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/multiverse newscast. And if you join over there, we have a tier of $4 a month, which is about $1 an episode, and really just kind of helps our show grow and continue to be made. We do a couple things over there. We do giveaways pretty frequently and just give away things just for being a patron. You don't have to do anything to earn a spot in the giveaways. But we also ask weekly polls over there, and then we just kind of generate conversation in the comments, and just patrons can kind of talk about them. So this week we asked, which Thunderbolts member do you rank as most important? We talked about a report last week of kind of how these characters were going to appear in Thunderbolts in terms of importance. And we had a landslide. We had 58% of the patrons said Bucky Barnes, which was actually ranked at the bottom of the list in terms of, like, importance in the film, it seems like. Right. Like, he's maybe not going to have a starring role as maybe we would expect. But, hey, the patrons, they want more Bucky at the end of the day.
Who does?
They want more Bucky or they want more Sebastian?
Well, Sebastian. That's to be determined.
Yeah. Yeah, so if you want to weigh in and voice your opinion, the Patreon is a great place to do that. All right, we also do a Spotify poll every single week, and last week we asked, which of James Gunn's titles do you prefer? And the choices were Superman in all caps, or the original title of Superman with the subtitle Legacy. And this one was pretty tight. And the winner is the current title, Superman in all caps, coming in at 52.5% with 32 votes. Is this as expected, unexpected? What are we thinking? Did we expect it to be this close?
I liked Legacy, and then I thought about the first thing. I'm like, well, I do remember that the first movie was actually called Superman the Motion Picture. So it was sort of just like, there's never been a Superman movie. So I don't know. I mean, it's as long as the movie's good, they could call it Superman taking a dump for all I care. Which I hope they don't, but the James Gunn, you never know with him. His trauma past might come up and bite him in the butt again.
I'll say for my part, I was kind of surprised how close it was. I was tracking this throughout the week, and initially it seemed like people preferred Superman Legacy, but then slowly but surely Superman kind of, you know, took the cake. And I have to wonder, were people just voting before they listened to the episode, and then once they listened to our opinions, they were somehow swayed? But I'm probably, you know, giving myself too much credit here.
I like Superman in all caps because when you put Legacy at the end, it almost feels like it's in memory of. And then Superman in all caps, it's like, this is it. And like, here we go, buckle up.
Yeah. You know what you're getting. It's like Superman Legacy. You're like, do I need to have watched something before this for like the casual fan? But just Superman, you're like, all right, I know what I'm getting into with this movie.
For sure. For sure. All right. And with that, let's pause for a quick break. We'll be right back after this. All right. And we are back. Welcome back, everyone. Now we dive into at least some people's favorite part of the show, the lightning round. So for those that may be tuning in for the first time or first time in a long time, just as a refresher, the way the lightning round works is we have an array of topics that didn't necessarily qualify as features this time around, but we'll run down those, and whoever wants to respond gets the opportunity to chime in with their name. First person to say their name gets dibs. And we are all afforded one rebuttal throughout the course of the lightning round. We'll see how that goes.
One-ish rebuttal.
Right. Everybody ready?
Let's do this.
Woohoo! All right. The 96th Academy Awards show took place Sunday evening, during which Oppenheimer took home 7 wins, including Best Picture, Lead Actor, and Director. Poor Things also had a strong showing with 4 wins, with Emma Stone receiving her 2nd Oscar.
Saturday. I honestly haven't seen a lot of these movies. I just chimed in so that I could say that Ryan Gosling stole the whole show.
Did you watch the whole ceremony?
Yes, live.
Okay, very cool. Yeah, I thought it was a pretty decent ceremony. It wasn't, you know, we didn't have any, you know, Will Smith slaps or anything like that, but it was, you know, Jimmy Kimmel did a pretty serviceable job. He had some of his gimmicks in there, kept things light, breezy, moving at a pretty good pace. But I thought there was like a certain element of prestige that was kind of restored here. And, you know, things kind of went as expected. I ended up going 17 for 23 categories as far as my predictions go. I should have counted on Oppenheimer being more of a sweep than it was, but, you know, I wanted to give a little bit of a chance to some of the lesser knowns. But yeah, all in all, I thought it was a great ceremony and a great award season.
It wasn't mentioned in the thing, but they got Best Supporting Actor, RDJ. I mean, first time he won something.
Yeah.
I thought that the one time I did click it on, I happened to like watch for a bit and saw the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito bit.
Oh, that was
and
great.
Then all of a sudden with Keaton with the Batman thing was just like, okay, that was perfect.
it was so funny. Like,
yeah, there were a lot of great moments, but that performance by Ryan just, you know, it was gold.
There's something about someone just fully committing to something, like just being like, 100%. I'm going to own this to the T. Like, I'm just going to go all out, which is what made him great in Barbie anyway. But he just brought that same sort of feel to this. It was like, you know what? If I'm going to do it, like, I'm going to give it everything I have. And he just does that consistently.
And they brought back, you know, not Shang-Chi, that's not his real name, but they brought him back. Thank you. And Gravik also, can't remember his name, but the people from the movie were in the performance. And also it was an homage to Marilyn Monroe. I don't know if anybody caught that, but there's a number she does. She's in a pink dress and the guys in the suits were in the very similar suits.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Before we move on, I did just have to add, you know, in terms of like what won and what didn't, I didn't really have any issues with anything except for animated feature. And, you know, not to take anything away from Hayao Miyazaki or Studio Ghibli, but I was surprised that Across the Spider-Verse didn't take it. That's all I'll say.
Because I think this might be like the last chance for Studio
we've heard
Ghibli
that before.
To get that. I mean, this was, he basically said almost like, this is it, I'm done.
He said with The Wind Also Rises, though.
Yeah, but I think he's getting up there. I know there's a point we're going to talk about in a second here when it comes to anime and you know, leaving too soon. So, but
and he puffs those cigarettes down like there's no tomorrow.
So. Yeah, that's true.
All righty, moving on. Amazon released a second trailer for its Fallout series adaptation ahead of its quickly approaching April premiere, which was moved up to April 11th, a day earlier than previously announced.
Jay, the trailer I thought was pretty good. I think it shows off the budget a little bit more than the first one did and shows off the talent a little bit more, like especially the main character, than the first one did. We did get a little bit of new information, like with this release, is that all of the episodes are going to drop at once, which is something that Amazon has sort of experimented with. Like Rings of Power was kind of coming out weekly, and, you know, Invincible, they split in half, you know, so there's kind of been like a little bit of playing around with the release dates. So they are dropping Fallout all at once. I don't know if that's the right move or not, but what I do know is that just the challenge of a video game adaptation is you have such a wide range of people coming to it. You have people coming to it for the first time who are just interested in a show, and you also have people who are hardcore fans of this franchise, which has been going on for decades at this point, across multiple consoles, like deep lore, like all that stuff. And from the trailer, what it tells me is that they are building that kind of very long, like, entry ramp to this to really explain the world to people who are entering it for the first time, which I think is absolutely the right move. That typically doesn't sit super well with like hardcore fans. Like, they want you to dive right in. They just want you to, like, you know, you're always going to get criticized. If you come in and try to do something new, you're going to get criticized. If you come in and do shot for shot adaptation, you're going to get criticized. We've seen video game adaptations do it poorly, and then we've seen that do it well more recently, like The Last of Us comes to mind as a show that can really stand on its own and be its own thing and really like take it to a new, and really like pull from the game and the lore and all that type of stuff, but really own it and be its own thing. And I think this has the potential to do that, but again, you're gonna have to get both of those groups to buy in. Like, you got to grab the fans and you got to make them happy because they're going to drive it. But you got to grab those people who are just like wanting to get into it, and they don't want to go play 20 years of games or whatever. Like, they just want to watch the show and kind of just get into it. So it's got an interesting thing it's got to accomplish with that. But I think I'm hopeful for it. I mean, I think it looks interesting and looks cool.
Yeah, it definitely looks like it has the potential to be a special series if you know what I mean. Okay. All right.
Video games, yeah, your adaptations are usually about, I want to say 90% miss, and that might even be low. I mean, there's not very many good adaptations because it all depends on. I remember getting so excited for the Assassin's Creed movie and then going watching it and being like, this is a pile of junk. Not even is it just bad, it's a bad movie. So it's just like, especially when you got something like Fallout that does have a huge, you know, span of, you know, the storytelling. Yeah, where do you jump in? Do you do the beginning? I mean, at least with The Last of Us, was there isn't as much in the game yet so far, so they could start at the point and not be like, oh, you're like four games behind now. So, yeah, as long as it's good at the end, I guess it doesn't really matter if it's a video game adaptation. Just make good TV shows and movies, I guess, which I guess is harder said than done. But you know, a lot of times just throw VFX money at it, and people will be happy.
We're spending more time on this than I intended, but with that point about like the expanse of, you know, like the Fallout story, like I'll speak for myself, but I have to imagine like my entry point, and I think a lot of people's entry point to the world of Fallout was Fallout 3. And the series does seem like it's really kind of tapping into that, like the whole theme song. Like it was the theme song from Fallout 3, like, I don't want to set the world on fire, what have you. So just wanted to get that out there. All right. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem director Jeff Rowe has signed a multi-year first deal look with Paramount to include animated and live-action projects. Scotty? I mean, this is exciting. I enjoyed Mutant Mayhem. I did have, you know, a couple of issues with it, but by and large, it seems like it was really positively received, and Paramount seems to be really pleased with Jeff Rowe. So, from my understanding, this deal includes, like, you know, writing, production, and direction. So the fact that this guy still has an interest in animation, but is also, you know, keeping his avenues open for live action possibilities as well, just sounds good to me. I'm looking forward to see this guy continue to prove himself and be given the opportunities and the resources to bring his imagination to life. Next up, Bo DiMaio, a writer on Moon Knight, Blade, and the creator of X-Men 97, was fired by Marvel last week before the X-Men 97 press tour began ahead of its March 20th premiere. Marvel currently has no comment.
I think we almost leave it at that. I mean, you really can't talk much more about it. I mean, it had to have been something big.
Yeah.
Especially if he's the creator of, I mean, the creator of the series based off of the original one, but it's still just like, I guess there also maybe are, you know, getting it before, they don't want to have another Jonathan Majors situation where it goes further and then they're just stopping it beforehand, being like, we have enough out there that, yeah, we gotta just not put you out there and then have to like defend ourselves later.
Doing it ahead of the press tour is kind of wild. Like, that's just not something that people do, like studios do, to especially, I mean, he was literally like the premiere of this thing. The red carpet event is like next week. So it's like, or like, it's like later this week or something. Like, I don't remember, but like, that's like days away. And so to let the guy, I mean, he literally created it. So to like let him go, like, it's something weird's going on there. Like, I don't know if it's more on them or more on him. I mean, we just got to wait for more details to come out, but it's something that just doesn't happen.
I think with it being this type of show, like with X-Men 97, it's not going to be something that's going to be, I think, is detrimental, because it's not like majority of the people are going to know this face. It's not like Kang was gone, or if they had to fire like a well-known actor or something, where this is sort of just like, okay, you know, people are still going to watch the show, I guess.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. People tend to, you know, pay more attention to the on-camera talent rather than the behind-the-scenes stuff, but it feels irresponsible to speculate too much. But the fact that, you know, he did delete his Instagram, like, this happened so unceremoniously, and, you know, having done a little bit of digging and research, it does seem like, you know, some of his coworkers have kind of come out of the woodwork. He didn't leave the Witcher series on the best terms as well. So, you know, whatever comes to light comes to light. But thankfully, the series, the first two seasons were done and in the can, and we have those to look forward to one way or another. Moving on to one of our favorite participants in multi franchises here, Star Wars Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Mulan star Ming-Na Wen has joined the cast of Sony's upcoming Karate Kid film. Cruel Summer star Sadie Stanley has also joined the cast as a romantic lead.
Saturday, I was not. It was just a movie that was coming out until Ming Na Wen was cast. And I'm like, okay, I'm excited to go see this now. You know, we all love her. So really excited to see her in another big franchise. Sadie Stanley, I watched both seasons of Cruel Summer. She was not my favorite of that season. She was in season two. So we'll see. I'm not as excited as I am Ming Na Wen.
Sure.
I didn't realize they were. Are they rebooting the franchise again, or is this a sequel to the Jackie Chan one with Will Smith's kid? Or
it's like... So that's my question too. I think when we first talked about this, apparently it's supposed to be bridging the Jackie Chan film with the Ralph Macchio films, with, you know, Cobra Kai. But that's my big like cause for concern here. The more and more news and casting we get about this film, it seems like it's going to be more and more separated from Cobra Kai, which, you know, maybe it should be. But I'm at least hoping there's some connection and continuity there, because if you're going to have, you know, Ralph Macchio, and you can't ignore all the things he's been doing over on Cobra Kai.
It's starting to remind me of like the whole Alien franchise. It's like all the stuff's coming out and being talked about. It's like, where it's okay, just make it good and we'll be good with it.
For sure, that's all we ask.
Yeah.
All right, this should be a fun one. Dakota Johnson has some pointed comments surrounding the poor reception of Madame Web, indicating she'd never do anything like that again.
I'll take this one. I'm sure you guys saw that. I can't think of her name. The one that just hosted Saturday Night Live.
Oh, Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah, where she's like, you might have seen me in, you know, this show or this, but you definitely didn't see me in Madame Web because no one saw that movie. And Dakota Johnson, I mean... I hate to say it. I mean, she's pretty much nepotism at work, isn't she? Because she's not a very good actress. I've never seen her in anything that she's been good in. She's got famous parents. You know what? I actually would never do anything like that again. Thank you.
So. She woke up and she was like, let's just burn it to the ground. I mean, she even came out and said, like, I don't even know what Hollywood's making. Like, this, the long quote, you should go look up the long quote if you're interested in it, because she went into more detail and saying things like, they try to make these movies with algorithms, and like they try to make it with focus groups and what the fans will want. And they just don't let creative people make movies, which, you know, there's valid things to talk about there for sure. And it's clear that that's exactly what happened with Madame Web. Like, it seems like ChatGPT just, it was like, make a movie about, like, you know, or whatever, and just generate. And it was a mess. But yeah, she's choosing violence.
That's Sony. This is basically Sony's just the reaction to that. We have to make a movie about this. Otherwise, we don't want to lose the Spider-Man rights back to Marvel. So we got to put out a movie every whatever it is, 18 months, 2 years or something. Even though we've got Kraven the Hunter coming out later this year. It's like, oh, it's been so many. I think it's been, since the last Spider-Man movie, it's been or whatever. It's like they have to make a certain amount. We got to put something out. Otherwise, we're going to lose the rights to it, you know.
Well, if my time in therapy has taught me anything, one of the denial patterns is blaming. And that's all I'm hearing from Dakota Johnson right now. Yeah. Anyway. All right. Next up, the sequel to the 2016 Ben Affleck action thriller The Accountant has moved from Warner Brothers to Amazon is set to start production this month. Scotty, this one kind of surprised me. I like that that film, The Accountant, from back in 2016. You know, it wasn't anything to write home about necessarily, but I thought it was like a nice vehicle for Ben Affleck. I want to say it was Anna Kendrick that starred alongside him in that movie. So, you know, the fact that this move, has happened and production is set to happen so quickly, it bodes well that apparently, you know, people have some confidence in this thing and want to see it happen, even if it's not Warner Brothers. Amazon does. And I wouldn't take Warner Brothers, you know, selling this thing as a sign of the quality per se. Warner Brothers is in just a really weird spot with, you know, all of their active productions and whether or not Zaslav is trying to sell them or what have you. So, all right. Next up, Zack Snyder ignited a conversation around superhero canon last week in an interview with Joe Rogan, speaking on the concept that Batman does not kill and how he challenged those notions of canon, saying, people are always like, Batman can't kill, so Batman can't kill is canon. And I'm like, okay, well, the first thing I want to do when you say that is I want to see what happens. And they go, well, don't put him in a situation where he has to kill someone. And I'm like, well, that's just like you're protecting your god in a weird way, right? You're making your god irrelevant.
Nobody. Well, we talked about canon earlier about how it I think more than anything, it kind of handcuffs creativity where you have to be beholden to something. Because, I mean, obviously, if Batman was able to kill, how many times could he have just killed Joker? And it's like, it's over. It's done. He had the amount, and that would have caused so much less problems. But he has that, you know, code of ethics where he doesn't kill. So, and it's also Zack Snyder, I think, just, you know, talking sometimes. And that's why we love Zack Snyder.
Yeah. I kind of want to know what Joe Rogan's response was. Like, yeah, but anyway, back to DMT.
Yeah.
talking about.
Or why you're making that god-awful show on Netflix that, you know, or the movies that they pumped all this money in and, like, absolutely no one liked them. And I can't even remember what the name is.
Is that Rebel Moon?
Yeah. I've heard people that say, like, that was just like, oh, my God, how did that even... It's Zack Snyder, but...
This quote is just sort of a Rorschach test for Zack Snyder, like, and how you see Zack Snyder. Like, if you read this quote and you love Zack Snyder, you're like, oh, yeah, like, he's pushing the boundaries. He's, like, doing the thing that nobody does. He's saying the stuff nobody says. You know, he's a visionary. If you hate Zack Snyder, you're like, he can't work within the confines of the thing. He has to push the boundaries. He has to just be the guy for the sake of being the guy, you know? So you're going to kind of feel how you already felt probably when you read it. And that's why everybody got mad about it, I guess, at the end of the day.
Like they do.
I'm surprised the interview wasn't in slow motion, though. Because that's what Zack Snyder does.
Yeah, right, with the saturation turned all the way up.
Yeah.
All righty, moving on from news that may have made some people mad. I think we can say universally this news makes everyone sad. Akira Toriyama, the influential manga artist who created the Dragon Ball anime franchise, has died at the age of 68.
Brian, this was a shock. I mean, because he died of what? He had a brain hemorrhage or something?
Aneurysm. Yeah, brain bleeding. Yeah.
Dragon Ball came out long after. I mean, it was geared towards younger when I was older, so I never watched any of Dragon Ball, but I know how influential it is. It's a big hit. I have a guy I work with who has Goku. He has, like, he's 90% of his body is covered with Dragon Ball tattoos, and he was like in mourning yesterday. Like, at least with that, though, that series is sort of has so many iterations that it's a huge loss, but it's not like all of a sudden you're going with, like, if say, like, Ichiro Oda, who's the guy that created and writes One Piece, where they still have a huge ending that needs to be done. It's still a loss, though. And it's just like, I don't know. I mean, it's especially when it's something like that, you don't get time to, like, process beforehand. If say, oh, he's sick, he's got cancer. No, he decided that and he's gone. And 68's not old.
No, it's young.
No.
Yeah.
Incredibly sad, you know, condolences to his friends, family, and fans. And I will say it was just really beautiful to see, like, all of the tributes that came out. Like, I think the creator of One Piece, as well as Naruto and various, you know, animes, they all put out their tribute to Akira Toriyama. So definitely his loss looms large.
It was like Natsu and Luffy and all of them. And you've got the main guy from Dragon Ball whose head's down and they're all, like, patting him on the back. Like, you know, it'll be okay. And it's tough.
All right. Sticking in the world of animation with a little bit of happier news here. Illumination and Nintendo will reteam for a follow-up to last year's Super Mario Brothers movie, set to hit theaters April 3rd, 2026.
Isn't this like a no-brainer?
That's right.
It made all the money, and they set up a sequel at the end of the movie anyway. So,
when a movie makes $1 billion, you typically make another one.
Yes, and it's that big of a franchise. Again, okay. So that's a video game thing that worked perfectly because they didn't stray too far from it. Plus, it's also animated, so that works a lot better too. So, and it was a really fun movie too.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, yeah. Coming off the heels of that movie that came out last year, I remember we started talking about, we got news that a Zelda film is in the works from West Ball. I think that's going to be live action. And we also heard, like, you know, Charlie Day's down to do a Luigi's Mansion film as well. So we knew that there were going to be more Nintendo movies coming down the pike. But this is, like, the first official, thing with a date attached to it. So my money is going to be on Super Mario World. based on the tease that we had at the end of the last film. I think that's the logical place to take the story, but we shall see.
All right. Makes sense.
Harry Potter actor Miriam Margoyles sparked some controversy among Harry Potter fans last week when she spoke on the idea of older fans of the franchise. "They should be over that by now," Margoyles said in an interview with New Zealand's One News. "You know, I mean, it was 25 years ago, and it's for children. I think it's for children."
Yeah, I'll take this one as our resident Harry Potter podcast host. As I'm holding my Hufflepuff Badger Squishmallow here. the fandom was pretty, not divided, but from what I could read, this actress's sort of dry humor. And so this may have been more in jest than it was in seriousness. But when you say I think it's for children. It is a children's story at the beginning, but JKR, she really evolved the series as her fans grew up. I was 11 when the first came out, and of course, you know, 18, 19, 20, and then into college when the movies are coming out. So we really grew up with Harry Potter. And so it's kind of hard to say like that it's for children when it was such a good, huge part of your life. And then in the longer story, she was talking about how she's on Cameo and one couple had a Harry Potter themed wedding and she cameoed for that or something along those lines. And, you know, I mean, people have Star Wars themed weddings. People have all kinds of themed weddings. So to say it's for children, you know, it's really not. And I mean, it's definitely not over. I mean, Max is about to launch a decade long series. So, but again, all that to say, it seems that it was a little bit in jest.
Plus, Miriam Margolyes is very much, she has no filter when she talks. I've seen her on many talk shows, like on Graham Norton and stuff like that. And she'll just be like, okay. She basically just says what's on her mind all the time. And it could just be like you said, dry. And it's like, well, that's what I think. Because I remember you mentioned Star Wars. Alec Guinness, when he was older, people were asking him about Star Wars. And he goes, why do you guys still like this? That movie was 20 years ago or whatever it is. It's just like, get over it. And sometimes when you get older in age, it's sort of just like maybe she is just fed up with doing all the stuff. But like you said, if she's getting paid to do cameos, it's like, you know, don't interrupt that income stream, I guess. So
yeah, she's not turning away that money.
No, but she is very much. I mean, I love when she's on. I remember she's been on sometimes when I forgot who it was that kept saying like for something, and it was like this, and like, and she's like, stop saying that, just stop using that word. It's not how. And she's it was Will I Am, and he's like, oh, there I go, I just use it now. She's very much like no filter, just says what's on her mind a lot of times too. So, but it's hilarious.
Yeah, so I don't take it too. I'm not insulted by it. Let's say that.
Harrison Ford does this too. Like he, when he goes on press tours, like he just gets people riled up because people just, it's like, don't care too much about what an old person thinks about something. You know, like, I don't know. It's like, it's like, don't take it personal. But he'll, like, people will be like, so when you met Kylo Ren, like, were you a Force ghost? And instead of just being like, I don't know, you'll have to ask George Lucas or whatever, he's like, what the hell is a Force ghost? Like, I literally don't care. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, just stop asking me these questions. And then people are like, oh my gosh. Like, it's like, who cares? Like, he's Harrison Ford. Like, just, you know, like.
It's got to that point with him, though, where he says it like you expect that. And they're like, yeah, that's what we wanted to hear anyway. That's why we asked you that question, because we wanted you to crap all over it, because we know that you actually make money from it. And you came back twice in the sequel. So it's like, it's not like you hate it that much.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right, let's move on to some other quotes. Bob Iger, speaking at a conference last week on the state of the film industry, said in regards to future Disney projects, it's not an easy thing, but you got to make those tough calls. We've actually made those tough calls. We've not been that public about it, but we've killed a few projects already that we just didn't feel were strong enough.
So I'm going to pull up a list of upcoming Marvel Studios projects, and I want you to tell me which ones are on the chopping blocks, okay?
Sure.
Or which ones you think maybe are getting on the chopping block. All right, so Deadpool and Wolverine, 0% chance, right?
Zero.
Agatha Darkhold Diaries, 0%.
No.
0%.
0%, right. Ironheart.
25% chance?
I'd say 10, just because it was
25 might be high. Yeah,
I'm leaning a little more on the higher side. It's done filming, but we haven't heard a word about it. That's what concerns me a little bit.
Oh, that doesn't matter for them if it's done and it's like it still costs. I never them pulling stuff off. Like you can't watch the Willow series that was on Disney Plus originally to them. It's not even on there anymore. They pulled it off. You can't watch it anywhere.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. It's the only place you could see it.
Daredevil Born Again.
Oh, that's coming.
0%.
Yeah, I'd say 0%.
15. I get 15%.
Captain America Brave New World.
Really?
25 because of how much problems they have. I'd say more like it'll be delayed.
That's fair.
I think they have to release it, but I don't know if they would if there wasn't already. You know what I mean? Like I think like based on just all the mess with it. Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
That's coming.
Yeah, 5%, I think so
maybe.
Too.
That's, yeah.
Yeah, Fantastic Four, 0%.
Oh, that's coming.
Zero.
Blade. Uh-oh.
Oh, Blade. That's 50-50.
25%.
Oh, I'm going, 50% or higher on Blade at this point.
If they could keep a writer and director, then maybe, yeah.
All right, wait, we're turning up the heat here. Armor Wars.
Woo! 75%. I think this is one of the most, this is one of the most likely.
I conflated that in Ironheart.
Yeah, so after Secret Invasion, I feel like it's got to be one of the ones.
Shang-Chi 2. I don't know.
That's got to come.
He's pretty busy.
Very unlikely.
Yeah. The director's very busy, though, is the only thing.
I think they know how much the fans want that, though. So even if it's not, you know.
They could change directors.
Destin Daniel Cretton. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Then we got the Avengers films. Who knows? I mean, would they change in title Kang Dynasty? Who knows about that, right? So
sure.
0%. 0% on those.
Wonder Man series.
50%.
I don't think so. We've heard
they're
about,
filming it.
That's so, exactly.
Yeah. Untitled Okoye series. 100% chance.
Yeah, that's upwards 75%.
Anything that's untitled.
It's 80% or higher on that one.
Nova. It's pretty high. I mean,
I didn't even know that was like active.
I'm gonna say 0% just because I really want to see that.
Yeah. All right. One more. Vision Quest.
That's the other one. That's God. It's that one in Armor Wars that I'm really concerned about.
Wait, is that like that wrestling movie from the 80s? They're remaking it? Vision Quest? The only thing I remember about that was the Crazy For You song. Oh, no, Madonna did sing that one on that one shot. On that. Anyways, that's just
we got age. We got some animation stuff too, like Marvel Zombies. I mean, come on. Like
That's happening. Yeah.
Spider-Man, you know, stuff like that. So, I mean, that's you feel pretty good about that. But
that stuff goes over a lot better, I think. And plus, also, there's a lot more put into it that it's not just like, I mean, I still think it's kind of dumb sometimes when you got something in the can and it's done and people want to see it. Like, what was the, at Warner Brothers, that Wile E. Coyote movie? That's just
Acme versus Coyote. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it's done. It's ready to go. But it's like, well, I mean, but then again, they, you know, put the kibosh on Batgirl too. So if you got enough into it, it's like, is there a cost? How much money are you going to lose by releasing it? Just put it on W or the Max or whatever. But people watch it that way. You know, at least it'll generate maybe people to come in and see it. But I don't know. I don't know the whole logistics of everything with streaming now anyway. So
I don't think any of us do. We're all learning.
Yeah. Okay. Did Bob Iger say that it's strictly Marvel stuff that they're cutting back on, or could it be like other animation and Pixar stuff too?
He kind of implied it. Like he spoke generally at first, and then he started specifically talking about Marvel and the vision for Marvel and stuff like that. So it seemed like there was a connection there, but you know, he did start general.
Yeah.
I think that was with him is because when Chapek was there and the transition happened and then the COVID hit and they were coming off of the whole you know, Thanos, you know, era of Marvel, and then everything had to be rushed out after COVID, and a lot of the stuff was hits, a lot of the stuff, especially last year or so, have been misses, and it's losing money instead of making millions or hundreds of millions. That's when it's just like, okay, well, you definitely have to pump the brakes on this because we definitely need quality over quantity now, because it's showing that with Marvel's box office is not, I mean, the Marvels, it's one of those things where, like, you know, superhero fatigue or whatever it is, if you're not putting out good stuff, people aren't just going to always go see it just to see it. And I think they also, with the whole continuity between all the stuff on Marvel and Disney Plus and movies, in theory it works, but a lot of people were confused and didn't you know, follow that path to get to the movie. And they're like, what's going on here? So maybe he's trying to focus it back to having, you don't have to be so beholden to all this other stuff before going to the box office or going to the movies to see something and be like, what did I just watch? What happened? How did they get here?
Right. Right. Yeah. It's a process. I think they're learning as much as we all are as viewers. So, all right. Matt Reeves, The Batman 2 has been delayed a year and will now be released on October 2nd, 2026. Scotty, I just wanted to say, an October release for Batman, how has this not happened sooner? I mean, I think it might have happened with some of the animated ones, but as far as live action, I don't think there's ever been a Batman film released in close proximity to Halloween. So
I think Mask of the Phantasm came out around that time, because I remember seeing
That's what I thought, yeah, when I said animated features. That's what I kind of thought, but yeah.
Well, we just have to wait. The first movie was so good, just make sure the second one's good and go from there.
Yeah, hopefully the runtime's a little more digestible.
Yeah.
All right. And finally, Neve Campbell revealed her return as Sydney Prescott to the Scream franchise in Scream 7 via an Instagram post. Scotty, I'm not sure how to react to this one. I'm still very much on the fence about the Scream franchise. Scream 7 obviously suffered some major blows, losing its director and its two leads in Jenna Ortega and Melissa Barrera. But, you know, bringing Neve Campbell back, the whole reason that she wasn't in Scream 6 or Scream 7 initially were because of, you know, salary disputes. So it sounds like, you know, it behooved them. What else are you going to do in this situation? You're going to pay Neve Campbell what she deserves. But in addition to that, they actually got the original writer from the first two Scream films. I don't have the guy's name. I want to say Williamson. I apologize. I don't have his first name ready, but he is going to direct the franchise for the first time. So I think it bodes well. You're kind of in a terrible situation when it comes to Scream 7. So you're going to have to do what you can to rebuild the excitement and the anticipation. I think the inclusion of Neve Campbell as well as the original writer are certainly ways to put a good foot forward.
I didn't even realize that she wasn't in the franchise. Or I saw Scream back in the theaters back in 90, whatever. And that's the only time I've ever 96. Seen a Scream movie. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, the franchise is waiting for you when you're ready. It's here.
I do want to add one quick thing here that it was announced today. And I don't know if Sarah Day heard this and I thought of it too, is that July, Fairy Tale 100 Year Quest will start airing the anime. So, which is the sequel to the main series.
Yeah. So, okay.
So,
yeah, will that be available on Crunchyroll or?
Yeah, I think Funimation, so, because that everything. Well, Funimation as of June 1st is gone.
As soon as I said it, I remembered that.
they merged themselves back like last March, and it's finally going to last month. I did a thing where all my stuff from Funimation, all my watch lists and everything, went to Crunchyroll, and. Right. The only thing I'll miss about that is Funimation's app was so easy to use. Sometimes with Crunchyroll, where you go to look at something, like it doesn't give you an option to change languages. It just has a list of all the languages when you're selecting what show you want to watch. So it's like My Hero has 15 different languages. You got to make sure that you don't accidentally pick Portuguese, because then you can't change it. You got to go back and find the list instead of just changing it in it. But they're getting better. So I've gotten used to it.
Well, if Brian's going to add something, I'd love to add something as well.
Yeah, what you got?
So this is for any romanticy readers out there. Margot Robbie was actually spotted having coffee with Sarah J. Maas, who is a very popular romanticy writer. And I am just hoping that means a Throne of Glass series is going to be coming with Margot's production company.
Educate me. What is romanticy?
Romance.
I was
going to
say, I don't understand anything you just said besides Margot Robbie.
I didn't think any of the three of you would.
Romance.
But...
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Romance fantasy.
Gotcha. Okay. Good to know. All righty. Well, on that note, this has been a fun episode. Thank you, everyone, for being here and tuning in. If you enjoyed this show and found any value, one of the ways you can support us is by giving us a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever else you catch us. And then we are also on various forms of social media. Jay, do you want to let the people know about that stuff?
Yeah, we're on Twitter at MV Newscast, and then we are on Instagram at Multiverse Newscast. So you can catch us on those platforms, come follow us over there.
Please do. And for our guest, let the people know where they can find your other projects. Sarah Day, why don't you kick things off?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram at captain.mcdee. That's M-C-D-E-E. And you can follow Peeves' Gabfest on Instagram at Peeves' Gabfest. And what we do over there is a chapter-by-chapter, page-to-screen analysis of the Harry Potter series in preparation for the new show. And we're just finishing up book two now.
Great, great.
Nice.
All right. And Brian V. Klein, what you got going on?
Source pages, if you just go to strandedpanda.com, we're listed there. All of our socials, Instagram, Twitter, our Facebook page, and check us out there. We take comics and novels as primers and continuations, and I'm sure Haley's talked about this before, so you know she's the better half of the show. And our next thing we're doing is we're talking about Asajj Ventress and Dark Disciple for a primer for the Bad Batch, because her character's coming back somehow post the book that, but we'll get into it. So
cool. And Jay Sisson.
Yeah, I'm at Commute the Podcast. It's a weekly educational show where we cover three interesting topics in 20 minutes. So you can catch us on Monday mornings.
Very good. As for me, you can catch me on Animation Deliberation, the podcast that takes action, animation, and cartoons seriously, but not too seriously. And over on Binger's Assemble, where I was a part of the Dune coverage, as well as the Oscars coverage, which obviously just came to a close. So check it out. And on behalf of Matthew Carroll, I'll say peace. You stay classy, multiverse.